Assalamu alaikum.
And welcome to another edition of Mind, Body and Chow. We're going to be starting the show off with the verbal fitness sessions. Ronald Avigy will be with us in a few seconds' time. Just a reminder as well, at 13:45, yes, according to two, we'll be speaking to Sumaya Kuvadia, life coach. Sumaya Kuvadia, continuing with the discussion on Teen World today. We're going to be discussing whether letting your kids or teens have the last say, will that give you more power? Well, I don't agree, but she will be retraining our brains regards to that. Remember, you can interact with us on SMS 48855. You can WhatsApp 0727861548 or Twitter at EJAZ_K. It's time to welcome Ronald to the Verbal Fitness Sessions.
Don't worry, Ed.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Ronald.
Walaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you, brother?
Alhamdulillah, I'm doing well. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. I'm excited about our topic and our workout ahead.
Brilliant stuff. I'm ready for you. Get set and get ready and let's go.
All right. So what we're doing today is we're doing cardio today because cardio fits right into what we speak about in our topic today. So really simple. I want you, wherever you are, simply on the spot, just to do light jogging on the spot. Make sure you're moving your arms and your hands, and very lightly on the feet, not high knees yet. Keep going, jogging on the spot, nice and easy. Right, get the blood flowing. Now, this warm-up you do for 60 seconds. If you're an older person, you say, Ronald, are you crazy? I can't run on the spot. All you can do is march on the spot, lifting the knees up. And that's it. Right, now from that position, Brother Jazz, I want you now to keep your feet shoulder-width apart.
Okay.
Bend those knees slightly.
Right.
As though you're about to sit on a chair. Keep those arms up, and I want you to punch your right hand all the way onto your left side. So you're punching across your body. All right? It's called a cross punch. So right hand to left side, left hand to right side. Go, go, go. Punch, punch. Cross body punches. Now, what you're doing here is by bending your knees, you eliminate focusing on your legs. You're focusing on the upper body and loosening up on the back. And you're going for speed, speed, speed. Go, go, go. Punch, punch, punch. Tight fist. Keep it going. Keep it going, keep it going, don't stop. This you do for 60 seconds. Now from that position, you're going to shift into doing uppercuts. Tight fist, tight arms, and in front of you, uppercuts, short jab, uppercuts as fast as you can. Not higher than your nose level. Go, go, go in front of you. Keep those knees bent. That's it, go. 60 seconds of this. Fast as you can, tight fist, tight arms, tight hands. Then stop that one. Then on the spot again, you're going to run with high knees this time and light foot contacts for 60 seconds. Go, go, go. High knees, light foot contacts. Move those arms. High knees, light foot contacts. Move those arms. Run, 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 run. 10 more seconds. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Great. And then relax it down. How are you feeling, Brother Jazz? Are you okay?
Pumped up, brother.
Pumped up, great. Now, the next one we're going to do, the last one for now. I love this exercise, all right? We're going to bend down, and I want you to let your fingertips touch the floor and then jump up as high as you can and land as softly as you can. And as you land, you're going to bend your knees back down. So it's a constant slight jump up and down squat. Are you ready?
Right, let's go.
So let's go. Squat it down, touch, jump up. Squat it down, up. Squat it down and touch, up. Squat it down and touch up. So you're landing very softly. For the older people, if you can't jump, all you do is you bend as low as you can and lift up on your toes, lifting your heels up. Same principle applies. Go, go, go. You do this for at least 30 seconds. Go for it. 8 more. 7. Soft landing. 6. 5. 4. 3. 2. And relax it out. And that's how easy today's workout is.
Not so easy, brother, but yeah.
For some it might be, for some it might not be. You yeah. It's easier than most. But remember that we need to keep challenging the body with exercise.
Of course.
Because we reach plateaus. And when you reach a plateau, your body mellows out, so you don't achieve results. Many people struggle with this. You know, whether they're eating consistently healthy or whether they're exercising in the same way, they always say, the scale doesn't want to budge, or I can't pick up more muscle. What do I do? And you reach a plateau, you've got to keep on challenging the body in all ways.
Of course, and I think if it's not challenging you, then what is the use? No?
I mean, totally, I agree with you 100%.
Right, so today we're going to be discussing smoking. I see a sister saying, yeah, I try to give up smoking, but I pick up a lot of weight. That's the reason I don't give up.
You know, that is the one thing when it comes to smoking. People associate quitting smoking with picking up weight. Now, you must remember, what does smoking actually do? It essentially suppresses your appetite, so you end up eating less. All right, you might drink more coffee, more tea, and you end up eating a lot less because it does create some sort of appetite suppression. And that's why you tend to not lose weight when you smoke, but you would tend to pick it up because then when you stop smoking, your eating patterns and habits are no longer suppressed. So then you begin to eat a little bit more without realizing that you've got to combat that activity to burn that extra calories up. So finding the balance between the two for that system will definitely make sure that when she stops smoking, her body will not pick up weight. But remember, it will only happen initially when you do pick up the weight. But the same principle applies. If you're eating consistently or eating too much, your body will hold on to that if you're not exercising enough to break it down.
Then the next one that comes in here, Ronald, it says hookah smoking is regarded as a healthier alternative, but is it really?
I think that's someone that loves the hookah pipe. You know, you get people that walk around with kit bags with a hookah pipe wherever they go. You know, here's what I need to inform you of, and I'm going to state this categorically. The hookah smoking is more dangerous for you than normal smoking, and here's the reason why. Because you might say that, no, Ronald, but I'm filtering this through water. No, you're not filtering anything through water. It's basically air as you're sucking that's pushing the water that creates the bubble. So they call it the hubbly bubbly. All right, but you're still having a smoky, tobacco-y type substance that's on there, and it's going into your system, and that's the toxin to affect your lungs. Now, the danger with hookah smoking is the following. It might not have the same tar quantities. It might not have the same negative or harmful context as cigarettes. However, the duration by which you consume a hubbly bubbly is a lot longer than one cigarette. If you're sitting with hubbly bubbly, watch it, an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours? Versus the cigarette, it might take you 2 or 3 minutes. So that is what is more dangerous, especially for the youth of the country and the world, because they think it's a healthy alternative and parents allow it. It is just, if not more harmful than smoking, and this is what studies are showing us. And more often than not, it leads to these young teenagers end up becoming smokers later on in life.
Okay, next one here, it's speaking about e-cigarettes, which is also a growing market. It says, is it true that it forms water bubbles on your lungs?
You know, e-cigarettes, there's a lot of research around it. Firstly, it's a very popular trend. And if you go into any mall, you'll find these big stalls with people selling these e-cigarettes. Now, these are battery-operated mechanisms that allow users to inhale or vape, you know, these flavored, vapored products from replaceable cartridges. Mm. But these cartridges are also filled with nicotine and other chemicals. So many people vape these e-cigarettes to stop smoking. However, these e-cigarettes have been met with controversy because there's no evidence that shows that e-cigarettes actually help people stopping smoking. So what happens is this, is that you are still consuming that nicotine, and that is the one thing that has become so addictive when it comes to smoking. You might not get the tar, but you're still getting chemicals into your system, and that is where the danger factor comes in. And what do people think? When you smoke, when you push that smoke out or exhale all that smoke, you think that's just going into the air? It's the same principle of secondhand smoke and third-hand smoke that applies. So my advice is if you're going to stop smoking, stop. Don't look for these quick fixes or alternatives, because it's a wonderful gimmick. These things are very expensive. And until the science comes out, I will not be a proponent thereof.
All right, we're speaking to Ronald Abergy, fitness and wellness expert. You've got about 4 minutes or so to get your questions in regards to smoking. You can SMS 48855. You can WhatsApp 0727861548. Now, Ronald, you were speaking about second and third hand smoke. How does it affect you?
You know, the health risk of second hand smoke, and what is second hand smoke? Secondhand smoke is when you are in the environment of a smoker, even though you're not consuming the cigarette. But how do you know you're in the environment? The minute you can smell that cigarette or that smoke, you are close enough to be affected by the chemicals in secondhand smoke. And the health risks are known in many countries, to the point where countries have passed legislation to ban smoking in public areas for this very reason. However, what people don't realize is that even if you smoke in a car and your window's open and you have your children in the car, they are still affected by the smoke. Because studies have been shown that it is more dangerous to smoke in a car with your children in it, even if your windows are all open. It's equivalent to being in a closed, confined space for 11 hours with people smoking. And that's what happens. So the chemicals still go in, because we still breathe it in for those that don't smoke. You still breathe that chemicals in. It still goes into your lungs, maybe not the tar, but the other chemicals. And it affects the functioning of your overall organs and your lung capacity. And it puts you at a risk of suffering from a disease of lifestyle, such as a heart disease and so forth. Because remember, our heart needs oxygen. Our heart needs that. And when our lungs get affected by the oxygen, it restricts the blood vessels, and that's why we increase our heart risk when you're smoking. And studies have shown that even secondhand smoke impacts that. And that's one thing. But the third thing that you mentioned was third-hand smoke.
Hmm.
And people don't realize what is third-hand smoke. Yeah. Third-hand smoke is the smoke that, even though you might be smoking outside, not in a confined space, your clothes still pick up on the smoke. Your clothes can still have that smell of the smoke. The chemicals are still getting engrossed in your clothes, in your lounge, in your carpet, anything that can capture and hold onto these types of chemicals and molecules. And when your children or adults or anyone else is around that in that space, they are affected by that, and that is known as third-hand smoke, which is also harmful because the chemicals don't just disappear into fresh air. They linger around, and you end up inhaling this because you walk on the carpet, you sit on the couch, you're wearing clothes, or your child comes to hug you. They're inhaling all these chemicals. And it has been shown that there are over 4,000 chemicals in cigarette smoke. And that's not good for anybody.
Finally, Ronald, why is it so hard for people to give up?
You know, smoking is addictive. One is it's habitual. Two is smoking is associated with having the nicotine factor, which is like caffeine. Our bodies get used to it. And the reason why it's so difficult to give up is the biggest thing is the habit. So when people look at giving up smoking, there are lots of programs out there, and many people have tried different things to give up smoking. But you need to understand that the effects of smoking are too risky on your health, and people realize this when it's too late. So it's difficult because you got to break the mental barrier associated with smoking. Maybe it was a childhood experience. Maybe it's just a habitual thing that you do after you eat or have a coffee, or it's a social thing. And that's where the danger comes in, because then it becomes a habit. And once it's a habit, it is so difficult to break down. But if you're looking for what happens to you once you stop smoking, within 8 hours, your blood oxygen levels increase and your chances of a heart attack fall. Within a day, you know, the carbon monoxide or the bad carbon dioxide in your body has left. Your blood oxygen levels rise. Within a month to three, you'll be able to smell and taste better. Your lungs gain the ability to clean. There's blood flow into your hands. There are so many benefits. So please, people, do whatever you can, but just stop smoking.
I see a message coming through via the SMS line. Maybe it's something we can speak about tomorrow, possibly, Ronald. Mm-hmm. Says, salams, Brother Jazz. Any good, easy diet tips or exercising for losing post-baby fat? I hate exercise, but I love to diet. Please help.
Oh, that's a wonderful question, because many people associate exercise with pain and agony and sweat. But the effect of it, what does it do once you've given birth to the baby? I love that question, and I think it's a wonderful topic for tomorrow.
Okay, perfect. So we'll do that one, inshallah, tomorrow. You have yourself a wonderful day, sir.
And to you too, sir, and to all the listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ronald Avaji there on the verbal fitness sessions on mind, body, and chow. Yes, you can indeed start sending your questions through for the second segment. We're speaking Teen World with life coach Sumaya Kubadia. Today, she's going to be telling us how it is that by letting your teens or your kids have the last say, you are actually taking the power. Don't agree too much on that one, but she's going to train our brains in understanding this concept. If you do agree that if you let them have the last say, that you will have the power, or indeed if you do disagree, do send us a message. 48855, WhatsApp 0727861548, or tweet at EJAZ_K. That coming up in a few seconds time.
When life is hard, sometimes you are the only one I'll follow till I die. So I will pray that Allah will keep me on the straight path, holding me close, I'll never stray back, keeping it deep within my soul. Just wait for me to come home.
It's time now for the Teen World segment with life coach Sumaya Kubadia. She joins us on the line now. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Sumaya.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi, Jaz.
How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thanks, alhamdulillah. How are you doing?
Alhamdulillah, I'm doing well myself, and I'm really looking forward to this discussion. Very interesting. I want to know exactly how it is that giving them the power, or the last say, gives us the power. So I know you're going to teach us that a bit later, but what do you want to kickstart the discussion on? Yeah.
This discussion is very important, you know, because I think it's very relevant. Most parents have that idea, you know, when you tell them, let your kids have the last say, it's like, how can I do something like that?
Yeah.
Right? But inshallah, in a few minutes, we're going to get into that. But before we start off, Ijaz, you know, I'd like to just throw out a question to you and all your listeners.
Okay.
You know, think about it. If something was getting remodeled, or if you walk into a construction site, would you expect everything to be fully functional?
Of course not.
Absolutely, right? So we can't expect it to be fully functional. So now imagine that visual that you just used now, right? That whole construction site. Take that same visual and step into the brain of a teenager, because it's exactly the same concept.
Yes, that
so
makes sense.
So now if we've answered that, no, you know, I can't expect things to be fully functional. So aren't we as adults expecting way too much from them at this stage of brain development? You know, I'm just throwing out this, you know, this question and just interested in knowing what people would think, that perhaps if we as adults lowered our unrealistic expectations and instead supported them more during this very crucial and vulnerable period, maybe something positive would take place. I don't know. I'm just, you know, just wondering. So I thought, let me just throw this out to the listeners, and it's something they could, you know, ponder on and think about.
100%. And you can interact with us by SMSing 48855. You can WhatsApp 0727861548, Twitter at EJAZ_K. Now, Samir, at some point, all adults have experienced teens flipping out. But what's behind this uncontrolled burst of anger and emotional upsetness?
Yes, you know, that's very important, Ijaz, because most often we as adults think it's, you know, just raging hormones or teens are just going crazy, but it really isn't as simple as that, right? We've established along the way, you know, that we've been doing this Teen World programs, that since the prefrontal area, you know, in the brain is in a state of reconstruction during that adolescent period, and it is the last area of the brain that really gets remodeled. That's the reason that sometimes, you know, at times the brain of a teenager is not really fully functional. And what that means is they're going to lose their cool much more often. And this remodeling in the brain is a necessary part of development, because it helps the, you know, the adolescent later on in years to come. So if you think about it, right, without this calming effect of the prefrontal cortex, that is what happens when, you know, when the brain is fully functional. Now, without that part being fully functional, we can't expect that teenager not to have these outbursts, because what happens is when that influence of the cortical region is not in place, right, what happens is the limbic system, it just throws out, it almost like spews out this, you know, if we can make it really dramatic, it spews out this limbic lava. And, you know, this burst of reactivity, that's basically what happens. And almost all of a sudden, a reaction happens, and without a warning, this teenager has completely flipped their lid. Yes, it does happen to us adults as well, but teenagers are more prone to that kind of, you know, of flipping of their lids. It's like the brain, you know, the lower brain doesn't even know what's really happening, and wham, out comes this reaction where, you know, they are completely out of control. But the thing is that this burst of emotional intensity doesn't last for a very, very long and drawn-out period. So that's the good thing about it. And another thing, if we look at it, you know, the reason why they flip out so easily, it is that in these moments, you know, when this very vulnerable prefrontal cortex is really not functioning on the top of its game. So when something is really not functioning at the top of its game, it can't really do what it's supposed to be doing, right? And that's the reason these teens will take the low road. You know, low road meaning these reactions that come up as emotional intensity or flipping of their lid. And more often than not, what happens is, you know, when they haven't slept well, or when they haven't eaten properly, or usually when they're under pressure or feel some kind of underlying emotional agitation, that's when the prefrontal cortex calming influences also doesn't work very well. Now, when you think about, you know, about all of this, it doesn't really mean that, you know what, teenagers are not functioning at this point in time. So what this means is basically that, you know, at this point of their lives, when they are in this adolescent period, the whole brain is not fully functional. right? So as adults, we need to give respect to this remodeling, you know, that the adolescents are going through. And this doesn't mean that the shop is closed. What it means is we need to make adjustments for the fact that the adolescent mind is shaped at times by a construction zone. Mm-hmm. That's basically what it is.
Yep, so you have to tread carefully on the wet floor.
No, absolutely. And, you know, if you think about it, Ijaz, instead of us using this whole thing about adolescence, you know, and all our old mindsets we had about what adolescent period is like, if we basically, I think, just used one concept and say the brain is under construction at this point in time, things are not going to be functioning well. So we need to understand and respect this phase of life that every human goes through. You and I all went through it.
Hmm. Just on a lighter note, Sumaya, you know, like walking in Sandton City, you'd see this white lady speaking to one of her friends, and then she'll complain about her son, and the youngster will say, "Shut up, mom." And, you know, if in a brown household, if that was tried, that youngster would be in the hospital, I think, after saying, "Shut up, mom." But, it's just different how different cultures relate to their siblings or rather their kids, you know, in terms of how they address them. But why do parents feel so brutalized at times by this kind of behavior?
You know, the reason is that, okay, you know, outbursts and flipping their lids is basically a normal recurrence with teens. You know, those banging of the doors that when you tell them something, the door just bangs shut, or that screaming outburst that just lasts for a brief moment, it leaves parents completely wounded at times because they say they're taking it very personally.
Right.
Remember, sometimes your teen doesn't even really mean what he or she is saying. Remember, again, it's that brain, that prefrontal cortex. You know, if you look at the prefrontal cortex, it's right behind your forehead, right? That's the part of the brain that organizes things, that balances everything out, that, you know, uses reasoning. Teenagers at that moment don't use their reasoning. So words just come out, and it's almost like they're spewing out these words. But, you know, trust me, if your neighbor's got teenagers, they're doing the exact same thing. If your family has teenagers, those teenagers are reacting in a similar manner, so it's not just you. So instead of taking everything they say personally and feeling so wounded because of that, you know, rather understand that this is what's going on in the brain. So let me not take what they're saying very personally. That way, you'll be protecting yourself from feeling that hurt that most parents feel.
Right. Now, but when is it that parents, you know, they reach the end of the line? When is it that they should seek professional assistance?
Well, you know, the only time that you should address this and seek professional help is when the short outburst, basically that, you know, that little bit of anger that you see every now and again turns into full-blown rage. You know, we've seen teenagers that become absolutely blind with rage, where something small just completely triggers them and they go over the edge. That is not cool behavior at all.
I call it rude rage, not road rage, rude rage.
No, absolutely. You know, absolutely. Basically, that's what it is. Because, you know, this is the point where parents should basically, you know what, give their children this message that there's a rule that should be written. I think every parent should write this rule, written on a card, put it on your fridge, and, you know, just tell them that abusive behavior is not acceptable, right? Because then it sends this message to your child that if you're abusive, then there's no excuse. You know, I don't want to hear anything. There's no reason for it. There's no justification. Because that kind of abusive behavior, you know, for example, where you said that, you know, the child told his mom to shut up, a child can't use that kind of language. Right? So that kind of language, if you leave it and it just goes unseen and ignored, it turns into something much more, which turns into rage. So rage is something that you should go out and seek professional help for, it because it's not just anger that's going to get over and done with. This is something that is a behavioral problem which then needs, you know, behavioral modification.
Okay. We've got like more 3 minutes or so for the main question, which I've been waiting patiently for you to answer. But I see a message coming from on WhatsApp says, why do most parents draw conclusions to anger management of teenagers' behavior?
Why do they draw conclusions? I'm not really sure I understand the question properly.
Yeah, it's confusing the way. I think maybe autocorrect is has not helped in this instance. But maybe they're saying, why is it that parents just draw conclusions that it's anger management that is needed? Or I'm not too sure if this is what... Okay, wait, let's go on to this final question, Smear, because I think it's very important, and that is what we've been asking people to interact on today, is why is it that letting your kid have the last word puts you in control? How does that help?
Okay, you know what, Ijaz? Just remember that teens are masters at keeping an argument going. Do you agree with that?
Wait, say again?
You know, teens are masters at keeping an argument going.
Yes, they can.
Right? So when you walk away from the discussion by letting them have the last word, this is the message that you're sending to them. That, you know what, this discussion is over and continuing to argue is not going to change the rules. Okay? Mm-hmm. And you take the power with you when you leave. So, you know, I'm a parent, you a parent, there's so many parents that are listening to us, and I know that we have a very strong natural instinct to keep responding when our child is arguing. But if you've made your point and there is nothing else to discuss, you know, consider ending the conversation right there. But then again, don't just make an abrupt exit, you know, express your intention by saying, you know, I don't want to argue anymore, or let's talk about this later when we're both calmer. And if your child goes on arguing, you can choose to show them that the conversation is over by not responding after you've set that limit, right? Because remember one thing, that an arguing teen is using the argument to wear you down. That's basically what they want. It's just a tool. So if you realize that, you know what, this is a tool they're using to wear me down, once the teen knows my parent has been worn down, you're going to give in very easily. Does that make sense?
It does indeed. 100% makes sense.
Exactly. So just look at it as arguing is a tool for them that they've mastered. Right? So disengage just ends the power struggle. So does that make more sense as to why you should basically, you know, just let your child, your teenager, your kid just have the last say?
So basically you're not actually giving them the power by having the last say of what rudeness they're having. You're just cutting it by not even responding. So you're still holding the power.
You're still holding the power, you know, because what you need to do is, you know, just ask yourself in that moment, you know, some questions. Have I got my point across? Mm-hmm. And if you say, yes, I have. You know, without you telling them this, but you need to just check in with yourself. Did I get my point across in this argument? Yes. Is there anything further to discuss? No. So that's when you just end the argument. You can exit it. And obviously your teen is going to go on arguing and arguing. But once you walk away, they're screaming at the walls because you're no longer there. And you take your control and your power back with you. Because if you prolong the argument, more often than not, you're the one that's left drained.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Jazakallah khair, Sumia, for all of those pearls of wisdom you have given us today. We are thankful for all that we have learned. Jazakallah khair for that. And we'll pick it up again in time, inshallah. You have yourself a wonderful day.
Jazakallah so much. You too, Ijaz.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
That was Life Coach Sumia talking about all things teen world and how you can let your kid have the last word, but still remain in control. You heard that there. Very good stuff. And to the listener, Jazakallah khair for sending your question, although autocorrect has messed it up. Maybe next time we'll pick up that question, inshallah. But it's come to the end of another edition of Mind, Body and Cha. We hope you've learnt a lot today, as every day. And you have yourself, all of you out there, inshallah, a wonderful day. From myself, Ijaz Khan, and Muhammad Salim, it's...
As-salamu